name's Maria. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Maria.
I was so grateful to Carol for asking me to speak. It's a real honor to speak at this particular meeting. And unfortunately, I was hoping to be in this brilliant, inspirational mood where I could sprout pearls of wisdom that would change all of your lives, and morph you into spiritual beings, and that we'd all be Gandhi-like after we left the meeting. But unfortunately, you know, I've kind of been going through a rough time, and when I feel this way, I oftentimes, you know, don't want to speak. I don't want to be visible. I don't want to be seen in front of people. But I realize that it's times like this when I really struggle with food a little bit more, and that's even more important time to be speaking at a meeting. There's a lot of people here who know me, and some who don't. And just for those who don't, I'm currently 34 years old. I came into the program at the age of 20. One day at a time. Hopefully in October I'll have 14 years of abstinence. I came in through Alcoholics Anonymous. I had gotten drunk and tried to kill myself and went into treatment for alcoholism. But this was always my mother disease. I always say that, you know, at 5 years old, this was the only substance I could get my hands on. And I always seemed to just have this enamoration for food, you know. Much like I guess the average woman might devour a GQ magazine, I was interested in cake and Twinkies, you know, and from an early age. And, you know, I remember being in the kitchen at like that. I was about three, and my mother was cooking cheese puffs. And it was like, you know, God was going to descend from the heavens and bless us all. You know, I had this completely enamoration of food, and it gave me such joy and excitement and happiness. And, you know, it started out that way, but it certainly didn't end that way. By the time I got to treatment, for alcoholism, I had been about 20 pounds overweight. While I was there, I put on about 25 pounds in a 5 week span. And I ate tons of desserts. I got to be friends with the chef. If there was a dessert that needed some kind of topping, you know, I was there to do it. And I suffered the humiliation of a disease. They used to put desserts out on the table for people to come up and take one after the meal. And I was going up two and three times, and everybody was noticing. And I was expanding quickly. My pants were busting open, and I was humiliated. I was really humiliated. And I remember being at one particular meeting, and I had a crush on this guy in treatment, which is always a great idea. We were at a meeting, and he didn't sit next to me, and I was so upset, so I went straight to the candy machine. And I think that's when I really saw it for the first time, because I always thought it was because the food tasted good, or, you know, gee, I don't know, I just hadn't planned that well, we just got one extra little thing, and it was always some other reason, and I think that's one of the first times I got that clarity that I was really sick and that I needed help. And while I was there, I heard about Overeaters Anonymous, and I heard that they suggested you eat three meals a day. And the day I was left treatment on October 3rd, 1992, is when I started to eat three meals a day. And my abstinence has changed, and, you know, I'll talk a little bit more about that from that time period. But I think what happened to me in treatment was that I came to a point where I was completely disgusted with my life and myself, and I was really willing to change. I think that's one of the biggest things when they talk about the first step, and that in our case, over food, that our life can become unmanageable. Up until that point, you know, I had suffered years with, you know, at first it was easier to restrict myself, and some days I'd have cookies for lunch, and, you know, I would skip dinner if I ate too much at lunch, and then, you know, just have regular meals the next day, and then suddenly I couldn't do that anymore, and I was binging, and so I had to start purging to take care of binging, and I never really understood why I purged. All I knew was that something was going on, I felt crazy, I would purge, and I would still feel crazy, but I would feel somehow like it was taken care of, or the beast had been satiated. And I never really understood what that was about, and I knew it was very weird, and it was my big secret. So when I was out amongst people, what you saw was not me. I was like this horrific skeleton that was going to jump out of the closet with, you know, big, massive teeth, because I was this horrible person who was bulimic behind closed doors. And you know, there's not a lot of, you know, you see these glamorous movies about alcoholism and cocaine addiction and the women in the limos. I mean, it's not like what it's like to swim and food back by yourself and then puking it up in the toilet. It's not glamorous, you know. And I think that in this particular disease, it's particularly isolating in that regard. It's purging, binging and purging and binging in general was something that I always, you know, most of the time did alone. I did it a lot at family settings. I'm half Italian. I'm Irish Italian, so of course I'm an AA in OA. there was always 10-course meals on Sundays and just trying to somehow get through it all and never quite making it. And, you know, I woke up every day thinking, today is going to be different. I'm going to starve myself this whole day. I'm going to lose weight and it's going to be better. And by like 11 a.m., I'd be eating, you know, cake for breakfast or some, I'd be off again, you know. And I swore every day was going to be different, and it never was. Especially, you know, I bottomed out while I was in college, and I had this meal card, which was like a gold card for food. I was up at school in City Buffalo in New York, and I could just go to any of the cafeterias and get whatever I wanted. And Jesus Christ, you know, it really did me in. So anyway, when I first started going to OA, it was back in New York, and, you know, coming from having been at, and this is just my experience, and I feel that AA is a mother program, so it isn't just something to talk about, but when I went to AA meetings back in New York, people would swarm around you if you're a newcomer, and my first OA meeting, when I walked in, there was just one lady there with her head on the table. I was like, is this the OA meeting? And she's like, yes. I don't understand this. Am I not supposed to eat? How do I make it? I don't understand what I'm supposed to do with the food. And she said, well, it's, you know, suggest you eat 3 meals a day, and then she just kind of went back to this. And I waited for other people to get there, but that was kind of my first experience. But I'll tell you something. I didn't give a fuck about this thing. I thought, you know what, if this Overeaters Anonymous thing, if this works, this is my oasis in the desert, because I didn't freaking care, you know, what I had to put myself through. I was just wanted anything so that the food was not on my back, but it was on my back. I mean, at that point in time, I couldn't even sleep on my stomach because I had such terrible acid burn from all the food I'd been eating. It was like up to my throat. So I was just so uncomfortable, physically, mentally, spiritually. And so I kept going to meetings and found ones that were a little bit more receptive. Back in New York, they had a lot of abstinent and sober meetings. And my first year, I spent a lot of time in meetings. And the program, the 12-step way of life, became the center of my world. And I was in anywhere from 5 to 7 meetings a week between the two programs. And that first year was really like building a solid brick foundation for what was to come. And boy, did I need that solid brick foundation for what was to come. And mostly, I'll tell you, the first year when I came in, my meals were very big. They were very large meals. And I still lost weight because I was not eating all day. Even if you go from eating all day to 3 banquets, you know, it was still better for me, you know. And then slowly but surely, accidents happen to me. All I can say is that, I'm the person who, every diet I've ever gone on, I've gotten fat. I don't know how to diet. I don't even know how to lose weight. What I know how to do is work the steps. I know how to try and connect with God. I know how to try and help other people. And I know how to reach out when I feel that I'm getting a little rough. And that's how the weight was effective. That's all I can tell you. How OA works exactly, I'll never really know. But I know that it does work, because I wouldn't be standing here otherwise. I mean, I was one of those, I was a gutter girl. I was like a gutter eater. I was a hardcore case. There was, nothing more attractive to me than food. And like I always say when I was drinking, if there was not a man or Oreos or a beer involved, I would get off the couch. You know? So it's really a big miraculous thing that I stand here. What happened was, I got busy working the steps, and I had a couple sponsors, one in each program, And these women grilled my ass. They grilled my ass. There was nothing I could get away with. I was living with my mother at the time, who was like a raging compulsive overeater, and she, I would buy abstinent food, she would eat it, and you know, I was really toe-to-toe with her all the time, constantly arguing, and I'd call up my sponsor, she did it again, and my sponsor would be like, yeah, huh, okay, write a horse down. And I'd be like, crazy, how did you write a horse down, you know? And I did. I had to take a look at whatever argument we had. I had to take a look at my part, and I had to focus on my part, and what was my part, and what had I done. And so other people are sick, too. And didn't I know that she was insane by now, and that I was dealing with a crazy person, and so why didn't I shift the way I dealt with her? You know, and I had to really just, and my sponsor would keep doing that. And, you know, I really got into the habit, instead of being the victim of the world and blaming everyone else, realizing that I had a major part in things. And that was a huge shift for me, because you know, when I came in and saw steps 6 and 7, we're entirely ready to have God remove all those defects of character. I was kidding. I thought I had 2 defects, my mother and my father. It wasn't for those 2, but, you know, I really just needed to take care of them and I was going to be just fine. So it was a real eye-opener. And I dated someone when I was about a year and a half abstinent. And I really, you know, when I came in, I didn't date in my first year. They suggested that it was a pretty big thing back in New York. And the reason I didn't date was because I felt that if I went through a breakup, I didn't know if I'd be able to handle it and stay abstinent sober. I just thought for me, I don't know if I'd do it. So I didn't date till about a year, and sure enough, it didn't work out, and man, was I devastated. I was devastated. And that is when I really became a more spiritual human being, because immediately my food was, I started getting really confused. I was down in college at NYU, and it would be lunchtime, and I'd have like a 3-hour break, and it used to be I'd go, I'd eat lunch and study. And I was spending like an hour going from restaurant to restaurant trying to figure out what to eat for lunch. And I was so confused, and I was becoming so obsessive. And I had to start calling my sponsor every day and turning my food over, and I had to start packing most of my meals because I just got to this insanity. And I had to start praying more because I couldn't, of my own accord, what had been so easy when I had been on autopilot just figuring out my meals, suddenly became the most difficult thing in the world. And I came down to a more normal weight, and like I said, it was just, sort of just happened to me. And I see a lot of people when they come in, and you know, I experienced this in other fellowships. I'm in many fellowships, unfortunately. They say, if you're not in at least 3, you're in denial. I don't want to scare you. I don't want to scare you. That was just my experience. Some people, it's a bridge back to life. For some, it's a tunnel to other 12-step programs. They say, I see people come in, and they want to lose weight like that. And that's why they're here. And there is a saying here, I came for the vanity, I stayed for the sanity. I personally, I didn't give a shit if I lost 5 pounds what I wanted for this room. I could have cared less. I wanted to not be hounded by the food. I wanted to just be able to be. I wanted to be able to not wake up and have my first thoughts be about food and all day long be about food. You know, at that point in time, I would be walking the streets of New York City and see this homeless person pass out, puking on themselves, and I would think, oh God, I wish I was them. At least they're not obsessed with food. You know, that's how it was for me. I really just was tortured beyond belief. And if I had called up my sponsor and she said, okay, Maria, to be abstinent, you need to crawl on your hands and knees, buck naked through the streets of New York, and you'll be abstinent, I would have said, gee, I don't really want to do that, but okay, because I'll be abstinent. And it's better than being in food. Because to me, the food is like I'm dead. It's walking death. It's not like really dead because you don't have the peace or the release. It's like a zombie existence. And I hated it, and I hated myself above all. So I started getting into that. Also, the big book talks a lot about seeking outside help where necessary. And that came to me in different ways. It came to me in I needed to get more psychological help. I needed to explore things for physical exercise that were different from what I'd done previously. I got heavily into dance. And I also started going to all different kinds of spiritual things, you know, some in churches and Native American stuff, and I drew a little bit from each thing because I was really curious about establishing a better picture and concept of my higher power. Well, at school, I was able to take a lot of classes on religion, and just kind of gleaned a little bit from each class that I took, because I was I kind of didn't understand God that much. Like, I couldn't understand why you pick a girl, give her an alcoholic father, and kind of like a mother who was just not really there. I couldn't really understand that. And I always had that big beef with God in regards to that. And so it really helped me to kind of take a look at these other ways of faith and try and extract a little bit from each one. And so that's how I started becoming familiar with step three, which, you know, came to believe, or sorry, maybe this is to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now, for me, my higher power is female, which works well for me. I don't think I have just one like higher power. You know, when I need to do things like clean the house, I pray to, or fix something, I pray to a male God. I know better. I'm more familiar with it. I thought when my first year, I read the third step from the big book, and I read it, and I thought, okay, I've read it, I really feel that. Okay, I'm done with the third step. But let me tell you, you know, as I've been in here, things of greater meaning to me have come along, and I've had to turn those things over too. You know, turning my life over when I had 4 months of abstinence and sobriety was not that hard because there was nothing in my life. I had friends. You know, I always laugh when people say, oh, I closed the blinds and turned the phone off. I didn't need to. Nobody was calling. So, turning my will and my life over at that point in time was not really hard because there was nothing in it. And then as things, you know, time passed and things came of greater meaning to me, greater significance, and I grew to love things and had hobbies and interests outside of OA and food and men and alcohol. It became harder to take that third step, and that's something I'm still challenged with to this day. I think that when I'm in these spaces, and I've been like passively, aggressively, quietly furious at God for the past 2 months or so, and I've never been one. Maybe previously I would come to meetings and rant and rave a little bit more, but I tend now to just shut down and implode, and I get very furious about the way things go, and I feel it's not a spiritual thing to express that, or I don't want to look like I haven't been working my program, I guess, I don't know, so I keep it to myself, but I get mad about things, I get upset that things are the way they are, and I don't like the way they are, and so I've been going through that these past 2 months or so, in a deeper level as far as, you know, romance and finance, and what am I doing with my life career-wise, and how am I supposed to figure all this out? And so what was usually a prayer before bed and a little meditation, I started being like, yeah, well, whatever, you're not really working for me, so I'm not going to do that right now. And I had a real realization last night. I spent some time meditating that, you know, it's been me who's taken the step back, and that it's been me who's been paying the price. And I literally pay a price when I don't meditate in many ways because I have a lot of neck and back pain, and when I meditate, something happens and it really alleviates a lot of the pain. It's I don't know if it's the spinal alignment, the position that I do when I'm meditating, but I physically feel a lot better, feel a lot clearer, and so I've been really paying that price. And the other thing I need to keep in mind that I learned a long time ago is that even if I'm yelling at God and I'm pissed off, at least I'm having a conversation. You know, and growing up Catholic, they don't really encourage that. Which is why, for me, you know, it's great when I see other people come in and they reconnect with the religion with which they were raised. That was not my experience. But as being raised, it was not something, you didn't really have an intimate relationship with God. You had to go through 10 people to get a message to God. And, you know, ranting and raving was, you know, you were going to be struck down, so you didn't do that. So, sometimes I need to have it out. I really just need to have it out. And it's not pretty, and I don't like it. I don't think I like having feelings, to be honest with you. Even if I was never happy and I could just be even healed for the rest of my life, I might even just take that. Because I don't like feeling pain. I don't like feeling discomfort. I don't like not knowing. I don't like being in the gray. And, you know, OA for me has been like, welcome to the gray of life where you just don't freaking know. And I swear, I'll tell you, I felt like I knew so much more at 2 years than I do now. I really, my sponsees will come to me and stuff, and I'll have an idea, and I'll be like, gee, you know, I don't know. You know, my job as a sponsor is to help my sponsee develop their relationship with their higher power through step work, and hope that the connection that they have will give them the information they need. Because I don't know. I'm just one person, you know. I'm not a trained professional. I can't solve everybody's problems. All I can do is help them with their spiritual relationship, help them develop their own third step and intuition, and hopefully from that connection, they can gain the insight they need to live their lives. So at this point in time, this year, this past year of my like 13th year has been, it's been interesting. It's been, I work now, I developed a lot of artistic things that I like to do. The fact that I got into involved with dance at all is amazing for me. I was always, like I said, a fat little lard ass on the couch. And so getting up and actually doing things has been it's been amazing. And I do dance sometimes now, and I'm just going to share this because for me it's fucking amazing. I dance professionally sometimes to get paid for it. And I never wanted anyone to see my physical being, you know, I'm too ashamed of that. And it's just freaking, like, I just can't believe it sometimes. And I'd like to think it's me, but it's really not. It's still hard for me when it's time to practice. I'm like, I don't wanna, you know. It's really hard, like, when I maybe do it 3 times a week, I should do it like at least 5 or 6. It's really hard for me, but I've been able to pursue things that I love because of OA, because the only thing that I could pursue without OA was my food. With binging and purging. The whole day was about binging and purging and how many calories, and I'm sitting here talking to you, but I'm really thinking about whether or not I'm going to buy something on the way home and stuff it on my face in the car or on the subway, or, you know, what am I going to do with it? I'm not really here. So it's allowed me to be really present. I'm not a huge financial success. I'm not married. You know, my gains have been very much internal, and a metamorphosis from within that's been expressed externally because the change has happened within. I'm a better person today. I work with 5th grade children, and I don't beat them. Freaking miracle some days. I have to really pray. It causes me to be a better person, because when you have 8 kids coming up, and to just kind of take a deep breath, and I pray a lot to help me to be of service to them on a daily basis. I enjoy the kids and stuff. It's not the line of work I've always wanted to do, and I'll wrap this up. I have just about another minute. But for today, that's where I am, and it's not a painful job. It's a pretty decent job. And, you know, I get through it. And certainly, I don't gossip as much about, well, so much, you know, sometimes I fall into that trap, about my coworkers. I handle myself with integrity in dealing with my coworkers, and I do the best I can. And none of that would have been capable without, it would have been possible without OA. So I think that's it for me today. And thanks a lot for letting me share.